very much from Goldschmidt. It's certainly was for me to be able to speak here at Shalavim. The reputation of this seminary precedes it, and it's an honor for me to teach students of such high caliber. I'm going to speak tonight about some themes in the Gilas Rus. I'm going to raise some questions, make some observations, which will hopefully lead to answers to the questions I'm going to raise, and then talk about some lessons that we can learn and apply to our own lives from the material we'll be covering. Boaz, in the final chapter of the Gilas Rus, performs two mitzvahs with regard to Rus. The pasuk says, Boaz talking, V'gam es Rus ha-Moaviyah, Eshes machlon, konisi li le'isha, lohakim shem hames al nachalaso. Also Rus the Moaviyah, the wife of Machlon, I have acquired as a wife to establish the name of the deceased over his portion. Now, Boaz doesn't use the word, but when you talk about marrying somebody's widow and establishing his name over his portion, you are already talking about the mitzvah of Yibum. However, there's a problem. Yibum has very specific halachic parameters. Yibum applies to one specific type of relationship. If there are two brothers, one of whom is married, and the married brother dies childless, it's a mitzvah for the surviving brother, or brothers, one of them, to marry the widow. And that is Yibum, and the child is considered the one who carries on the name of the deceased. That's only with a brother and a sister-in-law. Rus was not Boaz's sister-in-law. In fact, it's questionable whether Rus was halakhically married to Machlon, because there are those who say that she didn't, I mean, the Rashi explains it this way, the conventional wisdom is that she didn't convert until after her husband had died. So why is Boaz using the terminology of Yibum? I mean, you see, this kind of looks like Yibum. You are marrying somebody's widow, in a sense, somebody who died childless, but it isn't Yibum. So what is it? And Boaz performs a second mitzvah with regard to Rus and Nomi, and that is redeeming their field. That's Parshas HaShavua. You're going to learn this week's Parsha. And you'll see that if somebody sells his stay achuza, the field of his patrimony, the field handed down to him from his father in Eretz Yisrael, the family's portion, if because of exigency he has to sell that field, well, he should redeem it if he can. But if he can't raise the money, it's a mitzvah for the relatives of the person who had to sell his field to redeem the field. That's the mitzvah the way it's stated in the Torah. Now, Boaz, when he speaks to the anonymous other relative in the last perek, he talks about redeeming the field. But this, in fact, Rus, when she encounters Moab at night in the field, she calls him, she says, Ki goel ata, you are a redeemer. Redeemer, was their field sold? Is he redeeming the sold field? Listen to what Rashi comments on Rus calling Boaz, Ki goel ata, you are the redeemer. V'chamosi v'ani tzrichos l'mchor nachalaseinu. My mother-in-law and I have to sell our portion, the family's portion in Eretz Yisrael. V'ata, and now olecho liknos, it is your duty to buy it. That's not quite the mitzvah of the Torah. If you look at the psukim in this week's parsha, you'll see after somebody sells his field, then there is a mitzvah for the relatives to redeem it and restore it to the family. But listen to what, at least according to Rashi, what Rus is telling Boaz. My mother-in-law and I have to sell our field, and now it's upon you to buy it. The field hasn't been sold yet. They're not asking. I mean, Boaz isn't in a position to redeem the field. They're asking him to buy the field. They're in possession of the field when Rus is calling him a redeemer. So here we have two mitzvos, asei d'oraisa, that Boaz seems to be fulfilling for the good of Rus and Naomi, but it's not quite the mitzvah that the Torah commands us. So I think these points shed light on a medrash lekach tov, that says, Megillas Rus kulo chesed. Megillas Rus in its entirety is chesed. Its entirety. What does it mean, Megillas Rus kulo chesed? There's an excellent sefer on Megillas Rus called Nachalas Yosef by Rav Yosef Lipovitz, a Talmud of the Saba of Slobodka. And in there, he brings down definitions by the Rambam of three related terms, tzedek, tzedakah, and chesed. Tzedek, we would translate it as justice, I guess. Tzedek means carrying out your binding obligations. You do what you have to do, that's tzedek. Tzedakah, which we translate generally as charity, that's not the way the Rambam uses it. Tzedakah, the way the Rambam defines it, in the Moran Luchim, by the way, is carrying out a moral obligation, which is not a halakhic or legal obligation. Why do we refer to charity as tzedakah? This tells us something about the attitude you should have when you give tzedakah. You're not being a big sport. That money is given to you. You are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you, the feeling you should have is HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you his agent to deliver the money to the person who rightfully deserves it. Right? That's tzedakah. I may not have a legal obligation. He can't take me to a din Torah to give it to him. But when I give it to him, it's an imperative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not, if you give your 10 to 20%, that is money that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to you to give to others. You have a moral obligation to give it to them. Chesed, we translate it as kindness. That means doing something for somebody when you really have no obligation to them. Not a legal obligation, not a moral obligation. You're just doing it to be nice to somebody. They have no claim on you for what you do for them. Megillas Rus kulo chesed. Let me talk about another word which shares the same root as chesed, the same shoresh, and that is chasidus. Now, chesed we talk about in the realm of being adam l'chaveiro, the way we relate to other people. Chasidus already, it belongs in the realm of being Adam al-Makom. It's the way we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what is Chasidus? If you learn the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, he has three chapters in which he describes Chasidus in great detail. And he says, it's not when you fulfill your halachic obligations. That's not Chasidus. The example he gives, what's Chasidus? Let's say there's someone you love, your parent, your mother, your father, and you think right now they'd like a cup of coffee. They haven't asked you for a cup of coffee, but because you love your mother and your father, and it gives you joy to please them, you just go ahead, make a cup of coffee, and bring it over to them, just because they like it. You think they like it. That's chasidus. Halacha, those are the demands HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes on us. Chasidus is beyond that. Lifnim Mishuras Adin. when we do things not because the Kodesh Baruch Hu obligated us to, but because he has revealed the kind of things he likes. And we do that because we love him and we want to please him, even when he's not making demands upon us. Well, in light of that, we can begin to understand why Boaz did these things and how they fall under the statement of Megillas Rus Kulo Chesed. Yibum, right? When a man dies childless, it's a mitzvah for his brother to marry his widow, and any offspring are considered perpetuating the name of the deceased. That's the obligation. But you do see that it is a desired objective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's that the name of the deceased be maintained. So, in the case of Boaz and Rus, technically it wasn't evil, but it was in the spirit of evil. It was Hasidus. It was Lefnim Mishur HaSadim. The same thing when it comes to redeeming the field. Yeah, the Torah says when somebody has to sell his family plot, his family field, to raise money, so the relatives ought to pitch in, buy it back. You see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes the idea of the family's land remaining in the family. So, when your relative has to sell their land, and they haven't sold it yet, but you know he has to sell it, it's not an obligation for you to buy it and keep it in the family, but you see from the place, from the situation where it is an obligation, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers it a desirable outcome for land to stay in the family, so lifnim mishuras adin, you do it. Megillas Rus Kula Chesed. Chesed is the same as Hasidus. Chesed is to man what Hasidus is to your relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what Boaz did in these two situations would fall in the category of Hasidus, the close relative of Chesed. But there's even more. When Rus encounters Boaz at night, and they basically make plans to get married. So, let me find this pasuk over here. So, Boaz has some nice things to say about Rus. Vayomer, brucha at laHashem. You are blessed to Hashem, biti, my daughter, heteft chasdei ha'acharon min harishon. Your latter kindness is even greater than your first kindness. Boaz is referring to two kindnesses. What's the first kindness? Well, Rashi says the way she was loyal to Naomi and accompanied her to Eretz Yisrael, leaving her people. That's a great kindness. And the latter kindness is her offer to marry Boaz. That's simple pshat in the psukim. That's how Rashi explains it. But let me tell you, let me read the targum on that pasuk to you. Otavt tivutech basra min kadma. Okay, that's a direct translation. Your later tova, favor, okay, kindness, is better than the first, and this targum on Rus is not Targum Unclus. It's not Targum Unclus. It's 95% translation, 5% commentary. Targum on Rus is more like 60% translation, 40% commentary. It's not by Unclus. Here, what the Targum tells you what the first kindness was. Rashi says, first kindness, the way you treated your mother-in-law. Targum, Kadma'a, what's the first one? The Iskayart, that you became a Giorit. You converted. Kindness? Why is conversion? It's a noble act. It's somebody who recognizes the truth. It requires courage and commitment. But where's the kindness? Who are you doing a favor to by becoming a ger? Gerus, it might not be chesed, but it's surely chasidus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not demand that any non-Jew become Jewish. Ever. Of course, he makes demands on non-Jews. There is a good life and a bad life. There are chasidei umos ha'olam and the opposite. But Hashem does not ever require a goy to convert. No such thing. If a goy converts, it's always lifnim mishuras hadin. Beyond the requirements. Chasidus. Tov chasdei harishon. What's your first chesed? The iskayart. That you converted. And now, listen to this. This is a Rambam that I just found recently. Another example of chasidus in Megillas Rus. Perakei from of Hilchas Malachim, the Rambam says the following. Va'afal pishim utar l'tzeis, although it is permitted to depart from Eretz Yisrael if there's famine, that's the context. Va'afal pishim utar l'tzeis, although it's permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael because of the pressure of famine, eino midas chasidus. It's not something that a chosid would do. Listen to this. Shaharei machlon v'chilyon shnei gedolei hador hoy. Because Machlon and Kilion were the two greatest people of that generation. Ubepnei tzara gedola yotzu. And they left out of great distress. It was not comfortable in Eretz Yisrael when they left. V'nischaivu kliya l'mochum. And they were subject to annihilation by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because they didn't keep this midas chasidus. By the letter of the law, they were allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. You ask a shaila, there's famine, there's not enough food, may I leave? The answer is yes. But if you're a person who's a role model, if you're a person who sets the tone for everybody else, well, halacha, you're allowed to go. But you know you should be going beyond the halacha. Midas chasidus. But now, I want to take this a step further. Up to now, we've been talking about the Megillas Rus Kula Chesed in terms of going beyond our requirements. You find a different phenomenon, very strange phenomenon going on in Megillas Rus as well. We have instances in Megillas Rus not only where people go beyond the law, where they go against the halacha of l'shem shamayim. If not against the halacha, at least against the spirit of the halacha. And I'll give you examples. A simple one. Until the time of Boaz, you were not allowed to greet somebody using Hashem's name. The Jewish people, since the beginning of their existence, one of the things that characterizes us is trepidation about pronouncing the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are scared to pronounce the shame if we don't have to. To say a bracha levatola, all kinds of halachas to make sure you don't do that. It used to be that you were not allowed to use the Shem Hashem to greet people. But you find in the Megillah that Boaz tells his workers, Hashem imochem. He greeted them. God be with you. Right? To us, it doesn't strike us as strange. We're used to it. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, that there are times, and they're very rare, they don't happen in every generation, they happen very rarely, there are times when the greatest halachic authorities of the generation have the right to suspend certain halachas if the situation requires it. It's supported by a pasuk in Tehillim, Eis Lasos Hashem. There's a time to act for Hashem. Heferu Torosacha. They have nullified, put on hold your Torah. There are times when you can put the Torah on hold, suspend it, if there's great need. I can't imagine what the great need was, but Boaz saw that in order to instill the proper consciousness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the people of his generation, he wanted them to practice saying Hashem Inochem, to greet them with the name of Hashem. So there, that's certainly not fulfillment of an obligation. It's not going beyond the fulfillment of an obligation. It's doing something that normally is the violation of an obligation. Now, two more examples. The Alshich, Rav Moshe Alshich, student of the Ari, if you took a tiyul to the Galil this year, undoubtedly you went to the cemetery where he's buried, and he wrote a monumental Perush on Tanakh. Very original, and on Megillas Rus, it's just fantastic. He asked several questions on Megillas Rus, but I'm going to ask the two glaring questions. Two questions that you listen to these questions and you really wonder what's going on. And one of them, I'm sure, it's so obvious that it strikes anybody who goes through Megillas Rus. And that is, Nomi wants Rus and Boaz to get married. So what does she do? She tells Rus what to do. She says, Boaz is going to be all alone out there in the field at night. Go lay down at his feet. Go lay down over there. This is crazy. This is outrageous. This goes against everything we believe in terms of Kedusha. You can't do things like this. How does Nomi give Rus advice like this? That's question number one. Question number two is not as obvious, but I think as difficult. Boaz's father and Nomi's father and Nomi's husband, Elimelech, were brothers. That means that Boaz and Nomi were first cousins by blood, and they were aunt and uncle by marriage. Right? Nomi married her own uncle, Elimelech, who was also Boaz's uncle. And they were all from Beis Lechem. This is Mishpocha. I mean, undoubtedly, they grew up together. They knew each other. They went to all the Simchas together. They probably saw each other all the time. Now, what happens? Nomi and Elimelech go off to Moab. Elimelech is the Gadol HaDor, the leader of his generation. Wealthy man. Nomi is sitting on top of the world. She comes back, widowed, childless, penniless. I mean, what a tragedy. What a tragedy. What a come down. Shouldn't Boaz have invited her into his home? Boaz was a wealthy man, was a man of means. Shouldn't Boaz have taken care of her? But he ignores her. There's nothing going on between them. When Rus goes to Boaz's field and Boaz lets her pick the gleanings that are left over, and he even gives her 6 measures of barley to take home, we consider him, he's held up in the Medrash as a model of kindness. Is this the way to treat a close relative who's in a terrible situation? It's cruelty. Yet Boaz is a model of kindness. What is going on here? So, the Alshich answers both questions with one idea. It's a novel idea. I wish he would have brought more backing for it. But I'll tell you what he says, and he doesn't make things up. He says the following. There's a Medrash on a pasuk in Tehillim. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Matsasi David Avdi, I have found David my slave. That's a quotation from a pasuk in Tehillim. Heichon, the Medrash comments, Heichon Matsasi Yoso, where did I find him? Bisdom, I found him in Sodom. The Alshich, well, we all know that David HaMelech emerged from Rus, and he descended from Rus. Rus was a Moabite, And the Moabite nation had its origins in Sodom with the incident of Lot and his daughters. The Al-Sheikh says that the Jewish people had a tradition that there would come a Gioras from the nation of Moab. And this Gioras would be an outstanding woman, and she would be the ancestor of Mashiach. There was such a tradition. The Al-Sheikh says this. Now, Naomi knew Ruth intimately. She knew her as well as you can know people. And Naomi was certain that Ruth was the one. And she wanted Ruth to marry Boaz, because also it was no secret that Mashiach is going to come from the tribe of Yehuda. Boaz was the most prominent member of the tribe of Yehuda. He was cut out to be the ancestor of Mashiach. So now, Ruth and Naomi come from Moab destitute. Naomi knows exactly who her daughter-in-law is, how great she is. And Boaz has heard the reputation. She has heard that there's this very special Gioras from Moab who has come to Eretz Yisrael. And he knows what this could mean. He knows what this could mean. It could mean that he really ought to marry her, because the destiny of Klal Yisrael hinges upon it. So, first impression is, well, my poor aunt, my poor cousin, has come back. I should take care of her. I should, make her part of my household. But then he's thinking, if I do that, that's going to be the greatest kindness I can do in the short run. But in the long run, I can be messing things up badly for Ruth. Why? Let's say I bring these two women into my household. It's going to be impossible for me to marry Ruth. Impossible. You figure from the story, Boaz, I imagine him as a man approaching 70 years old. He's not a young man. I mean, it's clear. Ruth, she's a young woman, a young widow. If I bring her into my household, if I marry this woman, it can be a chilul Hashem. You know, when old men marry young women, it's generally, not always, a sign of immaturity. It's a sign of a person not willing to accept that he has lost his youth. I mean, that's part of life, right? For me, says Boaz, to marry this young Yoris, I'm the good Lador. Even if I have the best intentions, I'll be making a fool of myself in people's eyes. I can't do it. Furthermore, I'm a pretty good catch. I'm a rich man. I'm a man who's honored. You know, I've heard that this Ruth is a very special, very righteous woman. But I'm not so sure. It's a reputation. If she comes into my house, let's say she plays the part of a tzaddikus perfectly, how can I really know she's sincere? Maybe she's just trying to catch me. So, on the other hand, maybe I'm supposed to marry her. Maybe that's God's plan. What am I going to do? He says, if I bring her into the house, I've messed it up. I just can't marry her then. Keep her at a distance. I know it looks bad. I know it's hard. I'd like to do more for my cousin, my aunt. But I want to keep the possibility open of marrying Ruth. And if I bring her into my household, I've closed the door. Okay. Now, Naomi understands what's going on in Boaz's mind. And she understands that if she just goes and suggests the shidduch through anything approaching a traditional way, Boaz is going to reject it for the reasons I just mentioned. She has to devise some sort of scheme to get Boaz to do the right thing. And she's sure it's the right thing, because she doesn't know Naomi just by her reputation. She knows her personally. She knows they don't get any better than this. She's the real deal. So she says, you know what I'm going to do? Right? There's this tradition that the ancestor of Moshiach has to marry this Moabite Gioras, this Gioras who came from Sodom, right? What am I going to do to get this message across to Boaz? I'm going to give him shock treatment. To the best degree possible, I am going to have Rus perform a reenactment of what happened with Lot and his daughters. She's going to go to a dark place all alone with this man who has just had a big dinner. In those days, they drank wine before they went to sleep. And he is going to wake up in this situation all by himself with this younger woman, and he's going to realize he is kind of in the position of Lot with his daughters, and that will be an object lesson for him and drive home what he's supposed to do in this situation. Okay. So that is the Alshich's interpretation of events. But realize the things that Boaz did and that Rus and Naomi did, by any normal standards, are completely unacceptable. If somebody's relative, chas v'sholom, is in terrible need, you don't make cheshbonos, well, is Mashiach going to come out of this or not? No, that's not the normal way to do things. The normal way is you help the best you can. And under normal circumstances, if someone thinks, well, these two people are a perfect match, there's limits to what you can suggest as to how to get together. You cannot make the suggestion that Naomi made in this situation. It is outrageous. But they did it. Megillas Rus kulo chesed. Megillas Rus is people doing things not because the halacha obligates it, and possibly not even because the halacha allows it, but because it's clear that in this situation, it's Ritzon Hashem. Now, I want to elaborate on this as to when people can make a cheshbon like this and what kind of people can make a cheshbon like this. And for that, I want to read to you the last Rashi in Megillas Rus. Well, second last Rashi. So, when we get to the happy end, when Boaz marries Rus, and so everybody happy. Vayomru kol ha'am asher b'shar. All the people at the entrance to the city said, Vazkenim edim, and the elders were witnesses. What did they say? Yitain Hashem es ho'isha haba'o el beisecha k'rochel uchaleo. May Hashem grant that the woman who's coming into your house, talking to Boaz, should be like Rochel and like Leah, asher banu shtehem es beis Yisrael, both of whom built the house of Yisrael. I'll read you Rashi's comment on that. K'rachel uchaleya. The people said, may this woman who's coming into your house be like Rachel and Leah. Af al pi shehayu mishevet Yehuda, even though they were from the tribe of Yehuda, umibnei Leah, and they were descendants of Leah, modim heim al Rachel shehayso ikra shalbayis. They conceded that Rachel was the main woman of the house, v'higdimu Rachel l'Leah, and they put Rachel ahead of Leah. Okay, they were humble and they were honest. They're descendants of Leah, but they gave the position of honor to Rachel. I want to talk a little bit about the significance of that. I want to talk about what Rachel and Leah represent and what Leah's descendants were saying here by giving Rachel the position of honor. Parshas Vayetze, when we are first introduced to the two sisters whom Yaakov Avinu will marry. Listen to this. Ulavon Shtevanos. Lavan had two daughters. Shem Hagdolah Leah, the name of the eldest was Leah, Veshem Hakana Rachel, and the name of the younger one was Rachel. Veinei Leah Rakos. Leah's eyes were worn out. Rachel Haisa Yifas Torah Yifas Mara. And Rachel was beautiful of form and beautiful of appearance. Well, that's our introduction. Not too much description. Rachel, she's beautiful. All right, that says something about her. It's far from the whole picture, but it's something. You know something about her from that. You know how some people react to her, perhaps what attitudes she might have. Okay, but what do we need to know about Leah? What's important to know about Leah? She's being introduced to us. Einei Leah Rakos. Her eyes were worn out. Her eyes were tender. That's all you need to know. Now we can go further with the story because you know enough about Leah. Tell you the truth, I just don't know anything about Leah. I know something about her eyes, but I have no idea who she is. And that's all the Torah gives me. Let's look at Rashi. Rakos, they were worn out. Shehaisas vura lalos begorolo shel Esav. Because she was under the impression that she was going to wind up in Esav's portion. Ubochasa. And she cried. Shehayu hakol omrim, because everybody used to say, Shnei banim l'Rivka u'shtei banos l'Lavan. Rivka has two sons. Lavan has two daughters. Hagdolah l'gadol v'katanah l'katan. The eldest daughter is a good match for the eldest son. The youngest daughter is a good match for the younger son. So Leah was crying because she didn't want to be Esau's wife. But still, you think about it. I mean, isn't that a pretty stupid way to set up a shidduch? Oh, two sons, two daughters. Your oldest, perfect match. Okay? And Leah took this so seriously. Rav Tzadok HaKohen, the great Hasidic thinker, tells us that there's more to this Rashi than meets the eye. Rachel, the Torah tells us, was beautiful. Well, I'm sure Rachel was an attractive woman. But, still, so what? So, if you give it 10 seconds of thought, you'll understand on your own what so what. When the Torah says she was beautiful, it doesn't just mean she was attractive in the simplest sense. It means she led a beautiful life. Here, Yaakov came from Eretz Yisrael to Aram, and he's staying with his family, with his cousins, and he sees these two sisters as first cousins, and he sees this Rachel, he's there already for several weeks, and he sees everything she does is beautiful. All kinds of situations have arisen, and here is a woman who does the right thing. And the next word is, in the Pasuk, is Vayehav Yaakov es Rachel. Yaakov loved Rachel, not because she was pretty, because she was a beautiful person in the most meaningful sense of the word. That's Rachel. But Leah, she was crying. She was crying because people said she was an appropriate shidduch for Esav. It's not just a question of age. Leah knew herself, and she knew that she wasn't beautiful like her sister. She didn't always do the right thing. If you looked at her at the wrong moment, you didn't see the big picture, but you looked at her at her moments of weakness, a reasonable person could reasonably conclude, this is a woman who is a suitable match for Esav. She cried because she recognized her defects, and she cried tears of teshuva. And that is something very important about Leah. Really, that's all you need to know about Leah. And Rav Tzadok takes this and he makes a big theme out of it. This plays out in the descendants of Rachel and the descendants of Leah. If you look through Tanakh, every single one of the Baalei Teshuvah in Tanakh, without exception, are descendants of Leah. The most prominent is David HaMelech. I mean, so much of Tehillim is his expression of Teshuvah over the incident with Bathsheba, and Yehuda himself, Sodko Mimeni, she's right, I'm wrong. You look, Reuven did Teshuvah, every single one of the Baalei Teshuvah in Tanakh is a descendant of Leah. What kind of children does Rachel have? Well, Rachel is Yifas Tor, Yifas Mara. All right, nobody's perfect. But there are some people who've got things under control most of the time, more than most of the rest of us. They're the Yifas Tor, Yifas Mara, the beautiful people. And the Torah uses the exact same description, of course, in Lashon Zohar rather than Lashon Nekeva, about Rachel's son, Yosef. He's Yifei Tor, Yifei Mara. Beautiful of form, beautiful of appearance. And Yosef, of course, he's not the one who messes up and then does teshuvah. He's the one who resists temptation. He is the tzaddik gamur as opposed to the Baal teshuvah. And this plays out in dozens of areas of Tanakh, and it explains the entire relationship between the tribes of Yehuda and the tribes of Yehuda of Yosef throughout history. But one thing I want to say here, and that is, at the end of the day, Mashiach is not going to come from Yosef. There will be a Mashiach ben Yosef who will be instrumental in bringing about the Geula, but the Geula is going to come about through Mashiach ben David, who is going to reinstate Malchus beis David. As the Gemara says, B'makom sheba'alei teshuvah omdim sadikim gemurim einam yecholim la'amod. In the place where Baalei Teshuvah stand, sadikim gemurim can't stand. Baalei Teshuvah are on a higher madrega, because after they have done an avera, and after they have done teshuvah properly, they realize they are bigger people and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than they would have been had they never done the avera. There are areas of life that are off limits to us. A tzaddik gomer, a Rachel type, a Yosef type, knows where to draw the lines, never crosses the lines. Fine, you're perfect, you followed the rules. Get full credit for that. The Yehuda Leah type, they're more adventuresome. They're more attracted to the outside world. And they, well, see, the plus, the in the Parshas Vayishlach, Rashi brings down the Chazal that calls Leah a Yatsonis, someone who's too outgoing, someone who goes out a lot. The Leah Yehuda type, they are the extroverts, the people who are attracted to the things outside. And if you're attracted to things outside, well, the plus side is you develop relationships, chesed, kindness, good nature, right? The negative side is that there are all kinds of things out there that are attractive that are restricted to us. So if you have an attraction for those things, you might want to get as close to the line as you can, and sometimes you'll go and you'll step off and you'll get in trouble, okay? Whereas the Rachel, the Yosef types, they're strong in self-control. They are autonomous. They don't need external relationships as much. They get satisfaction from within themselves. Self-discipline. On the other hand, the downside of that is, what was Yosef's avera? Lashon hara. You tend to look down on people who are weaker than you. In any event, B'makom shabali teshuva omdim tzadikim gemurim einam yicholim la'amod, because after a person's failure, after the avera, when the person is in a terrible situation, then they have the opportunity, the possibility of doing teshuva, and through teshuva, done properly, you'll be better off than if you had never done the avera. Because then you'll see that even when you cross the line, you can still reveal a Kadosh Baruch Hu even in the forbidden terrain. There's a lot to be said about these ideas. I'll leave it at that. Now, let's go back to the story of Megillas Rus. So, all the people involved are from the tribe of Yehuda. And that's why they have this tendency to do these things that sound crazy, that sound wrong. Because, you see, the Yosef people, the Tzadikim Gemurim, to them, the main thing is play by the rules. Don't even get close to anything that looks bad. Tribe of Yehuda is more freewheeling, right? They're risk takers. And in this case, Boaz, by acting cold towards his relatives, took a big risk. Someone from the tribe of Yehuda? Huh, close relative, needs money? I gotta help out. What? Is a Kadosh Baruch Hu going to bring Mashiach? I'm not interested in Mashiach right now. I'm interested in what the Rambam says, what the Mishnah Berurah says. I'm supposed to give tzedakah right now. Hashem's going to take care of Mashiach, not me. Right? Nomi, she wants desperately Rus to marry Boaz. You've got, Mashiach is going to come out of this union, right? So she figures, all right, under normal circumstances, I would never suggest this, but just this once, go out into the field and lay down at his feet. Someone from the tribe of Yosef would say, God forbid, we're Torah observant Jews. You don't do things like that. You want to bring Mashiach? I can think of better ways for Mashiach. You stay home and you do the right things and do mitzvahs and you'll bring Mashiach. Not through things like that. So you realize, by the happy ending of Megillas Rus, what Shevet Yehuda, what you'd expect them to do, is say three cheers for Yehuda. Shevet Yosef never could have pulled this off. You know, Boaz took his risk, Naomi took her risk, and it succeeded. It paid off. A wonderful Jewish marriage between two wonderful people who are going to have wonderful descendants. We get a big Yeshkoyach. Shevet Yosef never would have dreamed of doing anything like this. But at the end of the Megillah, to the credit of Shevet Yehuda, the Torah plays up their great humility. What did they say? Yitain Hashem Haisha Haba El Beischa Kerochel Ukaleya. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant that the woman who is coming to your house should be like Rochel and like Leah. They acknowledged that despite the success of these wild things that they did, we must never lose sight that every Jew's ideal, even a Jew from the tribe of Yehuda, is to be like Rochel, to be like Yosef. You never make an ideal out of taking risks. In extreme cases, it might be justified. That's never ideal. Things like that are after the fact. After you're in trouble, after you've did the Avera, you do Tshuva. Tshuva's even greater than not doing the Avera, but never, God forbid, say, Ech Tova Oshuv, I'll sin so I can do the Tshuva. The ideal is always to be perfect as can be. And that's what the Shevet Yehuda said by placing Rochel ahead of Leah. They recognize that the ideal for all is Shevet Yosef, the model of Rochel. Thank you.